AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
You probably already know that there are currently over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage. If you're a farmer, that gives you over 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support ethanol. Learn more at poet.com/ag. We're going to continue to put perspective on the picks of President-elect Joe Biden to fill his administration. Today we're looking at the Department of Transportation. And, of course, it's time to get another update from the world of used machinery auctions. Hey, let's get this last week of the year at the top of my weirdest list started.
Live from the final Monday morning of 2020 via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. Sigh of relief, wow. Everybody.
Woo.
This morning we begin a conversation with Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson. Then it's Mike Steenhook from the National Soybean Export Federation. And right after the news, Michael Clark from BAM WX. I'm Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
There you go, changing the name of Mike's organization.
Did I?
Yeah,
National Soybean Export Federation? No, that's not right.
Coalition.
Coalition.
Soy Transportation Coalition.
Oh, geez. I was way off.
That's way okay. Off. How are you, my friend?
What a lovely Christmas weekend. Man. Oh.
Yes.
It was so great. How about, I saw you tweeted out that you were imbibed with the spirit of Christmas at one point.
Oh, yeah.
Must have gone very well for you.
Oh, yeah. You mean the bird feeder?
Is that what it was? The bird feeder that got you all hyped up? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so here's the deal. You know, every now and then I'll tweet something out that I think is kind of important. You know, guys, hey, pay attention. Mm-hmm. Focus, people. Focus. Mm-hmm. This is where I need your attention right now. And I might get, you know, 20, 30 likes, something like that. I tweet a picture of a bird feeder and it's like 140 likes. I love it. I love that. That is exactly what social media is for.
Yes.
I love that. Good work, America. Good work.
Yes.
So here we are cruising into the end of 2020, right at the top of the weirdest list for me, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Weirdest list of years, weird years. Yeah. Is that what you're referring to there?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. I might be able to add a few more descriptors to that as time goes on this week.
Easy.
But it's right at the top of the list.
Okay. Okay. I imagine some of the specifics will come up throughout the shortened week, right?
I would imagine. You know, and some of the comments out there about, I don't know how you guys could be so stupid to think that just because we're going to flip the calendar to 2021 that our problems from 2020 are going to suddenly disappear.
Oh, for crying out loud.
I don't think anybody thinks that. We still have a long road to hoe to get us out from the issues that we saw in 2020, but you got to start somewhere, and a freaking attitude check might be the place to start.
There you go. It feels like, you know, in the afternoon show, sometimes we talk about psychological resistance.
Yes.
Not necessarily technically that big of a deal, but we break through some psychological resistance, and if nothing else, doggone it, we all feel better trudging through
fantastic.
The same crap. You know what I mean?
That is
we're crossing
fantastic
through psychological
perspective.
Resistance. Yes, sir.
I love that. I love that. Mm-hmm. Good stuff, man. All right. So let's get the right attitude. Let's make our way through the end of the year. Start a new year with a better attitude. Let's get it going.
Let's do. Here, this will help. President Donald Trump signed the bill to release nearly $900 billion in coronavirus stimulus spending on Sunday night after previously blocking a deal he had described as a, quote, disgrace. Trump's decision to approve the $2.3 trillion measure includes $1.4 trillion that will fund the government through the end of September and avoid a shutdown set to start after midnight this evening. However, in an accompanying statement, Trump reiterated his demand that Congress increase the direct payment checks sent to Americans from $600 to $2,000 per individual. The Democratic-controlled House is set to vote on the increase on the stimulus checks today. Now, this whole thing lumped in with the spending bill has been criticized for all the pork that's in it. So I don't know if it's good news or bad news that he signed it, but he signed it. So there's that.
Yeah, and I did a lot of reading and read a lot of perspective pieces, opinion pieces on this bill. And one of the things that really kind of caught my eye was, okay, let's go ahead and call them one package, that one $2.3 trillion measure, 5,600 pages, call it. Some of the perspective is the only reasons that it is that big in dollar values and that big in page count is because that way nobody really knows what's in there and it's part of the swamp. So that's how they get stuff like this passed. You know what? Yeah. Let's bring back the line item on some of these things, which in essence is what Trump is trying to do.
Well, China has imported 9 million metric tons of corn in the first 11 months of 2020. That's China's largest ever corn import total. China also imported 3.61 million tons of U.S. crude in November. Now, January through November, Chinese oil imports from the U.S., get this, 154.5% higher than year ago. Meanwhile, imports from Saudi Arabia during the same period, 2.2% above the same time year ago. So they've leaned far more heavily on U.S. crude than Saudi crude.
Absolutely. Okay.
Yep. Just real quickly, one more thing. U.S. will require airline passengers coming in from the U.K. to test negative for coronavirus before flying. That's according to the CDC announcement Thursday evening. Amid reports of the spread of a new strain of COVID-19 that health authorities believe is significantly more contagious. Chip.
Okay. All right. Good stuff. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Michael Clark. He is with BAMWX.com. Michael, it's good to talk with you again. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
You too, buddy. Appreciate you having me on. How you doing?
Doing well. Doing well. So we got this storm coming our way to the middle of the country. Where's it at right now?
We do. Yeah. It hasn't really gotten its act together yet. It's going to develop just east of the Rocky Mountains and the panhandles of Texas and Oklahoma Tuesday morning, and it's going to bring a lot of snow to the Midwest and even some ice to deal with, too. So,
okay.
A nasty storm coming in.
I do not like hearing that.
Did he say nasty? Nasty.
Yeah. Yikes. He said nasty and icy, I think he said.
Yeah.
So what do we expect here? I mean, is it a layer of ice first, followed by the snow? And what kind of area are we talking?
Well, we're talking mostly all snow for really Nebraska, Iowa, Wisconsin. And then you're going to have a mixture. It's going to start as snow and then change to ice probably Tuesday night into Wednesday morning for far southern Iowa, northern Missouri, and portions of northern Illinois. There could be a period of some pretty nasty ice there. Again, the primary timing, it's going to start Tuesday morning, Nebraska, work its way in Tuesday afternoon and evening into Iowa. And then Tuesday night into Wednesday morning for northern Illinois and Wisconsin. So when we talk, you know, in terms of total freezing rain, well, the swath from north Missouri, very far southern Iowa, there could be a tenth to two tenths of an inch of freezing rain. So certainly enough for a problem.
Enough. Yep. That is plenty to cause some issues out there. Where does this one fit in your nasty scale?
You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd call it a 6.5. You're going to get a swath of probably, you know, 5 to 8 inches of snow across Iowa as well.
Gotcha. Good perspective. Thank you, Michael. We appreciate you, man. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you again next year.
You too, buddy. See ya.
All right. That is Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. Okay, when we come back, it's time for a conversation with Machinery Pete. We'll get the latest. And here on AgriTalk, we're doing it. We're refusing to be Debbie Downers. Let's do this.
Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. But exports are unreliable and have been flat for 30 years. So how do we utilize all that corn while ensuring dependable markets right here at home? POET is working hard to increase the amount of ethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%. Nationwide, adoption of E15 would generate almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year, which is the equivalent of nearly doubling corn exports by increasing domestic markets that can't be taken away. That's 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support higher blends of ethanol. It's time for farmers to unite around E15. Biofuels like ethanol are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture will change the world. Learn more about what you can do to support nationwide E15 at poet.com/ag.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
No.
No?
No, that's not what we're doing. No. We are not sticking our head in the sand. We are well aware of the issues that we are faced with heading into 2021, but we are not going to be all woes me about it.
No, we're not.
You can say, oh, but just because we're flipping the calendar doesn't mean it's going to automatically get. Well, you got to work at it, people. We got to make an effort. So let's the effort.
Yeah, maybe. And here's maybe the thing. And I thought of this in church yesterday morning, and Pastor was fine. But he was going along and sort of listing out all the things that we've come through in 2020, you know, bringing up some of the hardships and woes. And they have been absolutely significant, of course. Why don't you and I pledge that we're going to focus on the fun things, the good things, the positive things that came out of this year? Because I think, you know, maybe the easy pitch to swing at is, oh, look at all we've come through, man. Remember when we went through this? Remember when we went through that?
Not gonna do it.
What I had to cut my vacation a day short?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they shut down the restaurants.
Mm-hmm. I'm wearing a tie today and my characteristic cardigan. You know why? Because I'm facing 2021, the last week of 2020, in fact. I'm beginning with boldness. Boldness. Subtle personal boldness. This is what I'm talking about. Let's be bold. Let's be positive.
I love it. You and me together, man. We're going to do it.
Yeah, baby.
Hey, let's bring him in. Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. So, you with us here, Greg? Are we going to be positive going into the end of the year?
We're going to be positive. I'm with you, boys. Although I do not have my cardigan on, Davis, I have my hoodie on. So, I'm going to leave it at that, but I'm with you. We're going to be positive.
See, I think maybe Greg and I run with the same crowd more than what Davis does because I've got the hoodie on this morning as well. Love it. Love it. How you doing, man? Is everything okay?
Yeah. Hey, had a great Christmas. I'll just piggyback off what you guys said. I mean, a lot to be thankful for. You know, if you want to talk about some positives and on the business side, I mean, gosh, through all this crap this year, the online revolution, buying and selling equipment's been amazing. So there's a lot of efficiency there. It's fun to track. So, had a good Christmas. Looking forward to 2021.
Good, good, good. Love to hear that. You know, one of the themes that we covered straight out the box, I mean, we were into this hard in April, Davis, was the fact that we were starting to pull the future forward with the online meetings and the online auctions and the bigger commitment to the online customer out there. Mm-hmm. Boy, it really played out in the machinery auction business, didn't it, Greg?
Yeah, unbelievable. Like we've talked about before, guys, I was pretty worried back in the spring, just unknowns. But, you know, as a business sector, I think ag leaned into online and, you know, the online events, tiptoeing our way there, creating some great new stuff. But on the auction side, transacting used machinery, I'm telling you, it was full speed ahead, moved into the passing lane and just kicked butt. So auction, private dealers, I mean, it's a really, really good thing for the whole farm equipment sector. What's going to happen here? Cause it's going to help move what tends to be gluts of used equipment that gets stuck, which creates issues. So whether that's trading stuff in, if you're working with your dealer, it's online. I'm telling you, stuff is moving a little more efficiently, which is a good thing for everybody.
Nice. Love hearing that. Okay. Let's get the latest. Let's start it with the pick of the week. What do you got?
Yeah, pick of the week. We're going to Galveston, Indiana, back just under 2 weeks ago. Very nice. I think it was an online farm auction, like to our point about online. Yep. But our sale by our friends at Schrader Real Estate and Auction, very nice farm sale. They had an 04 John Deere 8420, 2,841 hours. So, again, here you're talking about a 16-year-old tractor with low hours. It was beautiful shape. It's over $124,000. Now, again, that sounds high. To fill in the perspective on it, it is high. It's the second highest auction price this year on an 8420. But the average auction price this year is $70,303. Now, that's actually up 9% over last year's average, which, you know, this is an asset. Deere made this thing from, I think, 02 to 05, so what, 15 to 18 years old now, up 9% in value. And interestingly, that average auction price, $70,300, just a whisker under the average dealer ad price right now, which is $72,537. So for years, 18 years now, in fact, I've had this stat I call our machine repeat ratio. Yeah. Nothing fancy. It's just you divide the average auction price by the average dealer ad price.
Yep, yep.
And again, 71 to 76% is about the norm. Here, in this case, on an 8420, we're at 96.9%. That shows you the market for good condition used tractors late 2020. Just really hot.
Okay. Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that like a, what, a 270, 275 horse tractor, something like that?
Yeah, I'd be in that neighborhood. Yep.
Okay.
It's, again, workhorse for its, you know, 15 yep. to 20 years ago. And I know another anecdotal fact to show you the demand on this thing. We had a for sale by owner come into our machinerypete.com website last week. In fact, it was a guy in, I believe, Preston, Minnesota, right down the road from me here, southeast Minnesota. Yeah. He had an 028420, 4,020 hours on it. Second owner, been inspected by the local John Deere dealer, actually had a new John Deere rebuilt engine in it at about 3,300 hours. And he's asking 109.9, which with that new engine right in the ballpark.
Yeah.
And I posted a picture of it on Twitter and Facebook, and the number of clicks it got was just incredible. So, again, it
really
shows you people see a tractor like that and they're interested in it. So it's, you know, they're very hot right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a tractor that has proven itself. It gets a lot of work done, and it's still in high demand out there. No question about it. Okay, let's go to Larchwood. What you got in Larchwood, Iowa?
Yeah, last week, December 21st, our friends at Kibble Equipment, they did another online auction with the good folks at the Steffes Group, and some very late model equipment sold. I thought sold pretty well here. They had a 2019 John Deere 9620 RX, just under 1,000 hours on it, with a warranty, which, of course, is huge. That brought $360,000 in a 2019 John Deere 9570R, four-wheel drive, just over 400 hours with warranty. That went for $338. Let's see. They had a 2019 John Deere 8370R, just under 1,200 hours with warranty. We did $259. And then if you get into the smaller horse, which we've talked a lot, was very hot all throughout the year. You had a 2018 John Deere 5115R mechanical front, 206 hours with warranty and a loader, went for $66,000. So I thought they, you know, got some real good prices there.
Oh, man. Yeah, that one sold well, no doubt. I want to kind of go rapid fire here because there are some results that we need to get to. So let's hop over to Milford.
Yep, Milford, Illinois. Our friends at Mike Peterson Auctioneers had a sale December 19th, week ago Saturday. Couple interesting highlights here, folks. They had a John Deere 460R round baler. I don't know if that was the first one I've seen or one of the first. 711 bales through it, brought $36K. Also had a John Deere 1590 15-foot no-till drill for $40,000. We've talked about how sometimes these no-till drills have been high of late.
Yep.
And then they had a Challenger, a 2011 MT 765C, 1,455 hours for $125K. So Mike and the guys, really strong sale. That was a farm estate sale for Robert Campy, I believe was the name, and beautiful equipment. So good solid prices there.
Okay. Very good. Back to Iowa Sioux Center and a couple more John Deere's.
Yeah, last Tuesday, Zomer Auctioneering had a sale, farm auction. They had a 2009 John Deere 9230, four-wheel drive, 3,380 hours with the PTO, new front tires. That brought 122K, another four-wheel drive model. They had 05-9220, 3,458 hours with the PTO, went for 100. Sprayers, we've seen some nice older sprayers do well lately. They had a 08 John Deere 4730, just over 2,000 hours for 86.5, and then a Brent V1100 grain cart, 37.5. So, again, real solid sale over there in northwest Iowa last Tuesday.
Beautiful, beautiful. Real quick, what are you watching this week?
Wednesday, Sullivan, Indiana, Jeff Boston Auction Service has an online farm sale for Donald Schlute. 86 model 4850 two-wheel drive, 2,847 hours, one owner. That could be a hot one, folks.
Big Iron's got a big one too, huh?
Yeah, Wednesday, Thursday, two-day sale, year-end. Over 5,000 pieces on the sale. Check it out at bigiron.com, folks.
Got to check that one out. 5,000 items for sale. I'm going to go take a look at that one. Thank you, brother. We'll talk to you next year. Happy New Year, man.
All right. Happy New Year to you guys.
There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. Moving from 10 to 15% ethanol nationwide would result in almost 2 billion bushels of new domestic corn demand each year. That means nearly eliminating the need for corn exports by ensuring dependable markets right here at home while driving commodity prices to profitable levels. Biofuels are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady back with us. How you doing, Beej?
Oh, I'm all right, Chip.
Good, good, good. Hey, this bean market traded higher in the overnight. Then we get some export sales announcements for soybeans, for corn, for bean oil. And beans decided it was time to turn around and go south. What's going on?
Well, you know, we're closing out the year here, last couple trading days of the year, and yep. Just some profit taking. I think we've had a heck of a run up here, and like you said, we extended the gains overnight. Just ran out of buyers once we got to daytime trade, but we'll see how it all goes. Argentine strike, still watching that, so the meal market primarily watching that. Weather down in South America. Looks like Brazil could get some rains over the next couple weeks here and be mostly favorable aside from far southern areas and maybe the northeast. Argentina seems to be the area of bigger concern, not only on the export side of things with that port strike, but also with the weather. So that's something to keep in mind as we move forward here fundamentally.
Very good. Okay, we've got some plus signs going in the cattle complex.
Yeah, not real active trade. I think that, you know, there's some optimism maybe that the box beef market will push higher, maybe that the cash cattle market will push higher. But, you know, neither are very good barometers into the end of the year, especially during holiday weeks. And so that's probably a potential hurdle as we move forward through the week in terms of buyer interest there. Hog market facing a little bit of price pressure, so just kind of the mirror of what's happening in the cattle market. But all in all, pretty quiet morning of trade so far in the livestock.
Yeah, very good. You got to take the trade this week with a grain of salt, but you can't ignore what's happening in here either. Thank you, Brian. This is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. You're listening to the new AgriTalk with Chip Flory and me, the handsome newsman, Davis Michelson.
Davis, I think we should go with Nickelback all week.
All week? Let's do it.
All week.
I'm good.
All week.
All week. All right.
I'd love it.
I'll put in a request.
Excellent. Excellent.
Not going to happen. Sorry.
Oh,
sorry,
big,
Chip.
Big Apple.
Sorry. No, it's
Big Apple Joe.
The old days, I could have made it happen, but this new system, I can't just be. I know you guys give me a lot of credit for the music that plays here, but I really don't have that kind of control. It's the computer is taking over.
Dude, you can't let people know that. You're the magic man, Big Apple Joe.
He's just hiding behind that so he doesn't have to play Nickelback.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah. Painfully obvious.
Painfully. Oh, right. Hey, we have been trying to highlight some people on the show that are going to be working directly with new members of the Biden administration if plans go, or if things go according to the Biden plan.
Okay.
And we end up with these people in their positions and they get through the nomination process and everything. We've been trying to highlight some of the people that are going to be working directly with the new administration to get their perspective on it. And they've got a great opportunity right now to bring in Michael Steenhoek. He is the director of the Soy Transportation Coalition. He joins us right now. Mike, it's good to talk with you again. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Chip. Always good to be with you.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, Mayor Pete Buttigieg is going to be the next transportation secretary. That means that we're going to have a Midwesterner at the head of the Department of Transportation. In the big picture, Michael, how important is that?
I think it is important. You know, one of the things that I was really, focused on when watching for these signs from President-elect Biden about which direction he's going to go on infrastructure is I just wanted to make sure that we had a rural perspective incorporated into that discussion and ultimately what the strategy is by the Biden administration. And I was seeing a lot of the transition team dedicated to infrastructure was mostly populated by people with a focus on things like, urban transportation, subways, urban transit, freeways, those kind of things. Clearly that's important and it's critical to so many Americans, but we have to have a balanced approach. We can't just focus on the urban needs of America. We also need to focus on the rural needs. And so it does provide some optimism that here you have a person who is from the Midwest, albeit not from rural Midwest, but still from the Midwest. And also, throughout his extensive travels through the state of Iowa during the Iowa caucuses, he clearly was exposed to the needs of rural America. So I'm hopeful that that perspective will be incorporated into any kind of strategy that he and the rest of the Department of Transportation formulate when it comes to the infrastructure needs of this country.
Okay. You mentioned his travels through the Midwest when he was running for president, but how well do you think Buttigieg really understands what all needs to be done?
It really remains to be seen. We know he's a bright and intelligent person, and he was exposed to these perspectives. He doesn't have a real extensive portfolio when it comes to infrastructure, but that doesn't mean that he can't be an effective Secretary of Transportation. What it does reinforce is that agriculture needs to be intentional about reaching out to the administration, to upon his confirmation, Secretary Buttigieg, to make sure that those needs related to agriculture are clearly expressed to him, and we express a willingness to work with him to try to advance some of these solutions.
Yep. That takes me right into the next question here, which is people like you, Mike, the guys at NCGA or the people at NCGA, people at ASA, what's going to be your first priority when it comes to communicating with Secretary nominee Buttigieg?
Well, I think the Department of Transportation they do have some areas related to maritime transportation under its portfolio, but surface transportation really is the focus. The Army Corps of Engineers is more focused on things like the inland waterway system with locks and dams. So I think one of the things that we really need to underscore, particularly as we have a new highway bill that's slated to be completed during the course of 2021, is let's make sure that there are things related to rural roads and bridges in that package. Maybe having some certain set asides to make sure X amount is addressed to rural needs, rural roads and bridges. That's something that's going to be really important to us. That's the first link in the supply chain for farmers. If you don't have, they're not sexy, but if you don't have an effective system of rural roads and bridges, it really doesn't matter the condition of your freight railroads, your inland waterways, or your ports.
Yeah, Michael, that's a point that I wanted to make, is because when you and I talk on AgriTalk, it seems like so many times we end up focused on the waterways. But the fact, the undeniable fact is that there is so much work to be done on rural bridges, rural roads, that honestly, I don't want to take away any attention from the waterway needs, but we need to make sure that people understand just what needs to be done on rural roads and bridges.
And that's something that I always want to make sure is a significant emphasis of the Soy Transportation Coalition for that very reason. But it's also the mode of transportation that's most relatable to farmers. How many farmers actually contract with a barge company to load some soybeans, or with a railroad, with Union Pacific Railroad or any other railroads or a port? Every single farmer at some point, either they contract it with someone to deliver it for them or they deliver it themselves. They are moving a crop from the farm to the initial delivery location. And that's not the interstate system. These are rural roads and bridges. And it's also the area of the country where the needs are most extreme. You know, when you look at bridges that are rated as deficient, they're disproportionately in rural areas. So it is an area that certainly needs a lot of attention, and it's going to remain a focus of ours.
Well, and it's visible, Michael. It's visible to the average taxpayer out there that if a bridge goes out in a township in the middle of Iowa, people know about it. If we've got some problems on one of the waterways, we got to spend time publicizing the fact that there's a problem on a waterway. You know about a bridge.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I try to underscore is the American public. It's not so much they have a problem with government spending money. They have a problem with taxpayer dollars going to the government, and then they don't understand what it goes to. And they have a really hard time understanding, okay, I gave $10 to the federal government. Did I even get $1 of value back?
Right.
And one of the things that's good about infrastructure is you can actually, when you see a new bridge, you're able to, it's really indisputable. You see the new bridge, or you see an enhanced port or a new lock and dam or a new stretch of road. Those are things that the American public said, they'll look at that and they'll say, okay, at least I got something from my hard earned taxpayer dollars.
Amen.
And so that's one of the reasons why I think infrastructure is really, it's a great opportunity to actually get something done with this new administration in a bipartisan fashion.
Yeah. You know, every time that we hear infrastructure programs, Michael, it seems like the word bipartisan is attached to it. If that's the case, and if this next Congress is going to be willing to work across the aisle, infrastructure programs are a way for them to prove it, right?
And I think sooner rather than later, because you know what we just continue to see is the closer you get to an election day, politics starts to crowd out the ability to do anything in a bipartisan fashion. And you know, if President-elect Biden wants to make a bipartisan first impression early in his administration, I think infrastructure is one of the best ways of doing it, and to show that he's actually committed to getting things done. Clearly, COVID is going to be a major area of focus for him and the administration. But I think we can do something simultaneously on infrastructure. It would be a great first impression.
Absolutely. Absolutely, it would be. Okay, the new spending bill was just signed by the president overnight. Anything that we need to be aware of in that spending bill regarding infrastructure?
We were really pleased that a Water Resources Development Act was included in the larger spending bill. And one element of that we're celebrating is the fact that it changed the cost share for whenever you build a new lock and dam or do a major rehabilitation. The current cost ratio is 50% federal government, 50% the Inland Waterways Trust Fund, which is a tax that the barge company industry pays. That cost ratio has changed from 50-50 to 65% federal government, 35% Inland Waterway Trust Fund, or the private sector. And so that's a big win for us. And you know, obviously that allows the money that the private sector pays to be spread out over more projects. Obviously, we need to make sure the federal government provides their share of the funding as well. But that's something that we've been working for a number of years. And so a lot of credit needs to be extended to the barge industry, to agriculture in general. It's very much a team effort to get to this point. And we're really celebrating that. That's that this cost ratio has been changed from now to 2031. So we have about a 10-year window for that. And so again, it's a success. And again, with the issue about locks and dams, it can sound like a broken record that we keep something we keep talking about. This is a success and we need to celebrate it.
That's outstanding. Outstanding, Michael. Thank you so much for your time this morning and for your time all year. You're always a great conversation and you're full of really important information that we need to stay up to date with. Thank you so much, buddy.
Hey, thank you, Chip. Happy New Year.
All right, Michael Steenhook, the director of the Soy Transportation Coalition.
When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Sir, yes.
Great conversations there with Greg Peterson and with Michael mm-hmm. Steenhook. The wealth of knowledge that those two bring to the conversation is undeniable. And you guys, if you ever find a way to support the Soy Transportation Coalition, do it. If you ever find yourself in an opportunity to shake Michael's hand and just say, hey, thanks for doing what you've done and keep these issues on the front burner, not the back burner, do it. Mm-hmm. A little bit of encouragement goes a long ways. And Michael has been working on these issues for quite some time, and we need to keep him there. He needs to keep working on those issues.
He's among those people who are working hard in maybe times when it doesn't seem like much is happening. You know, we talk about you see the duck and it seems like it's just sort of floating along, but you look, you know, beneath the water in the aquatic environment and there's those webbed feet just a churning away. Yep. I don't know if I'd characterize him as a webbed foot, but dude churns away. I'll give him that.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Oh, Davis, it had been since December 11th, since we had a daily export sales announcement from USDA.
Is that right?
Yes, December 11th.
It's like 20-something today,
The 28th. The 28th.
Oh, you want to get all scientifical about it, sure.
I'm very specific all of a sudden.
And why is that?
And this morning we get four.
Oh, we four?
Four. Export sales of 233,700 metric tons of soybeans to unknown. Sales of 125,000 metric tons of soybeans to unknown. Export sales of 149,572 metric tons of corn for delivery to unknown destinations. I'm going to call that Mexico.
Okay.
You know, just because of the very specific tonnage going on a rail and heading south. Export sales of 33,000 metric tons of soybean oil for delivery to unknown destinations.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
In this case, do not spell unknown, C-H-I-N-A. I'm not convinced of that in any way.
N-E-T-H-E-R-L-A-N-D-S, perhaps?
What now?
N-E-T-H-E-R-L-A-N-D-S, perhaps?
Oh, it could be. It could be. Yes, mm-hmm. It could be headed straight to Rotterdam. Didn't you just spell Rotterdam?
I did, but I used the French. I used the French spelling, actually.
The French spelling, gotcha. Yes, could be going
Showing
to the Netherlands
off a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could be going to the Netherlands. No question about that. But and it could be China in here. If it is China, then they are starting to push into the second half of February for some of these deliveries. And if they are starting to push into the second half of February for deliveries, they're growing more and more concerned with the available supply coming out of South America. But when you throw in there the cargo of soybean oil to an unknown destination, Davis, it's that strike. Before I went on vacation a couple of weeks ago, we talked about, okay, yeah, isn't this cute? Argentine dock workers, Argentine port workers, they're having another strike. Good for them. Oh, boy, it'll be over soon. Well, it feels like it is now having an impact. Bean oil, bean meal futures have backed off a little bit, and so have soybean oil. But you heard Brian at the bottom of the hour. He's just we're looking at a situation where this market has outperformed so robustly over the last few days that a bit of a setback into the end of the year. Where do you fall on this one? Is the end of 2020 the end of a decade or not?
That's a good question. I saw that tweet.
Yeah. I don't know. Is it? I say that 2019 was the end of the decade is how
that's
I look
end?
At it. It's
you ended 20s. On the nine? You ended on the nine. Okay.
That's how I do it. I don't know if it's right or wrong, but that's how I look at it. So some would say that we are not only looking at the end of the month, but we are looking at the end of the year and the end of the decade. If you're going to ever have an opportunity to, you know, spruce up the books, this is a great opportunity to do it. And some of the funds out there, the hedge funds, we talk about the hedge funds and the professional trading funds in the commodity world like they are emotionless, that they are completely computer driven, that they are, you know, analog this and analog that and algorithm this and algorithm that, and off they go. There is actual brain power. There is actual human activity involved in the decision-making on many, many of these professional trading funds. So if we're going to get into the end of the year and they're looking at the kind of profits that some of these funds are going to be looking at, absolutely. It's time to take profits. It's time to build a portfolio, right? Where you can go, hey, look at what we did with my fund in 2020. So I think there may be some of that going on here, and shouldn't surprise
you. You know what? It occurs to me, there was no year zero, right? Didn't it just start at one? Was there a year zero? Zero BC or I don't think so. I'm beginning to think the good professor might be right. We might be closing a decade here.
Wow.
I think there's the right way and there's the natural way. The right way is probably to say, you know, 2001 to 2010. But the natural way is to say, if you say the 1940s, nobody doesn't include 1940. Right? Nobody includes 1950 in the 1940s.
That's a good point.
That's the natural way.
That's true.
Right. It just feels natural.
Joe's right. It just feels natural.
Yes.
I think Joe's right.
Let's explore this more later.
Oh, we've got to.
Explore it more later. Hey, everybody down in Nashville, we're thinking about you. Terrible happening on Christmas Day.
Crazy stuff.
We'll get through it. We will get through it, and we will get it figured out how things like this can happen and hopefully prevent it from happening again in the future. Come back this afternoon. We got Steve Georgie from Allendale right here on AgriTalk.